Hello and welcome to this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. We have a lot to get into in this midweek edition with the FedEx Cup playoffs about to start on Thursday in Memphis. But Rex, before we get into some of the players and the storylines to watch this week at TPC Southwind, the PGA Tour released its 2025 schedule on Wednesday. On the outset, very few changes year over year. Same signature event series, same full field tournaments, same Aon Swing 5 and Next 10. Truist is in for Wells Fargo. Philly Cricket Club is going to be a host site in 2025. Memorial's back to its usual date 2 weeks before the U.S. Open. What stood out to you, if anything?
Well, the two things you pointed out, Memorial flipping and Truist stepping in for Wells Fargo and moving out of Charlotte, which is a different conversation because it seems to me this is probably a temporary thing. However, Charlotte's been such a good market for so long. Quail Hollow has been, you know, just a staple on the PGA Tour. So I'm not going to say I'm surprised. I knew there was, you know, issues with Wells Fargo and trying to find a new sponsor, but it is kind of a tough blow to take. And then when you look at Memorial, I think Jack Nicklaus, the host, had been pretty clear about not wanting to stay in that date. I think most of the players, including Scottie Scheffler, had been pretty clear about not wanting to play the Memorial the week before the U.S. Open. They want a week in between there. So I understand that. I guess what I went back to, though, if you're going to start, you know, slicing up exactly what this schedule looks like compared to last year, you're right. It looks almost identical. However, you have now split apart one of those, I don't know what you want to call it, swings within swings, and those opportunities that they're trying to give the players outside of the top 50 a chance to play their way in via the Aon 2 list. I don't know how that's going to be remedied with the way the schedule is right now. You have one event essentially between the Memorial and then the U.S. Open, and then I think you have two. So it's become a little bit more fragmented, which I think the tour wanted to get away from, but I don't think they had a choice on that matter going back to where Memorial was.
So I think there's a couple of things to dissect here. On a micro level, you could point out that there was not going to be a match play event on the PGA Tour in 2025, just as there was not again in 2024. That was sort of a low-key priority for PGA Tour officials. Apparently, they were unable to make a deal there. I do look forward to seeing Philly Cricket Club in 2025. Mm-hmm. Supposed to be awesome. It's a great reminder, too, that the PGA Tour does not have a steady event in Philly, in Boston, in New York, in Chicago. That seems like a big oversight for me. I guess they are supposed to go back to Quail Hollow for 2026 for the Truist Championship. Obviously, Quail Hollow is the host site for the 2025 PGA Championship, so they had to move it out of there. On a macro level, Rex, it's clear that the PGA Tour stayed with what happened in year one of this new model. Jay Monahan said it's been successful. Obviously, you and I have debated whether it has or has not been successful on this podcast numerous times in 2024. A few things about the signature event model, because as we stand right now on the eve of the FedEx St. Jude Championship, the churn rate among the top 50 does seem pretty good. Right now, before the first leg of the FedEx Cup playoffs, 19 of the top 50 players are new. That's 38%. That's actually slightly above what the PGA Tour was projecting. I think if you're a fan of churn, if you're a fan of turnover, if you're a fan of not having a quote-unquote closed shop in the PGA Tour, those are all good things. I still do not love the fact that two of these signature events, which limited field, biggest purses, biggest points, two of them are after major championships. If these are supposed to be the PGA Tour's marquee events, it seems like a letdown after a major championship rather than sort of a buildup in enthusiasm heading into the beefier part of the schedule. I also don't like, Rex, that they're not rotating these events. At least they're not going to do so in 2025. That seems like a missed opportunity to bring the PGA Tour's very best players, and you know the set fields that we're going to get with these signature events because there's just so much at stake, to different markets every year, to build up some of these quote-unquote lower-level events and just sort of energize a different segment of the PGA Tour fan base. That to me, feels like a big miss.
Two things. One, I was talking with a PGA Tour official during the Olympics about this, and it's pretty much what they predicted. So you have to give them credit. I think I was certainly dubious. I think you might have been as well, for no other reason than in my mind it was math, and I'm not very good at math, so I guess I shouldn't have been so outspoken about it. But if you were giving out that many exponentially more FedEx Cup points in the signature events, and most of them don't have cuts, and it's giving the players in those events – pretty much a free reign just to go out. And I kind of went through the list before we got on the podcast. I'm kind of shocked some of the names that actually fell out more so than the names that played their way in. The deck was stacked against those 19 that you just pointed out that found a way to pretty much play their way in. And they did it. And so I'll give the tour credit. Like their models, their predictions held. And as long as I think they continue to hold year in and year out, this is probably going to be the future. On the new markets, I think you're right. The same official told me that the idea of not being in New York City, the idea of not being in Philadelphia or Boston or Chicago, these big markets, that's bothersome to them. I mean, of course, you want to have your biggest events in those big markets. So they're going to take a hard look at the schedule going forward. The problem right now with especially the three playoff events, they're locked in. FedEx wants Memphis. That's where their headquarters. Coca-Cola wants Atlanta for the Tour Championship. That's where they are headquarters. And BMW is the only one that's willing to kind of rotate within that Midwest category or territory. So you're kind of, I don't want to say landlocked, but you're certainly in a difficult position when you try to find new places. But yeah, it's ridiculous they don't have an event in New York City.
Rex, this is the start this week, the FedEx St. Jude Championship for the FedEx Cup playoffs. And at least for this one, and we've talked about this now a couple of times over the past couple of weeks, for 1 week at least in the PGA Tour, it almost even isn't about the PGA Tour's very best players, because we're going to get to them at the BMW Championship and them angling for the top seed stroke play-wise for the Tour Championship. Mm-hmm. Obviously, when we get to East Lake itself, first, in the beginning of the week, it's going to be about the golf course, which has been restored by Andrew Green. And secondly, it's going to be about that staggered start and who can actually take home the season-long prize. This week, though, is all about the top 50. And it does seem wild, at least at the very top, that Scotty can fall out of that top spot with the season that he has had. But this top 50 is so important for scheduling. It's so important for career advancement. Yes, you still have to perform. And we've seen, obviously, the players who have fallen out, the 9-10 of them, to this point. But it's no doubt a head start for 2025. With that in mind, who is either just inside the bubble or just outside the bubble that has your attention this week at TPC Southwind?
There was a couple of players that stood out when I was kind of going down the list. First, Nick Hardy found a way to somehow drop to 163rd on this year's list after finishing inside the top 50. And I was so curious. I had to go and look at his record. He doesn't have a start better than 28th or finish better than 28th. He missed more cuts than he made. Like, okay, that's the recipe for not getting this made. I think the one that probably stands out the most to me, and, you know, we're going to go down the list, Victor Hovland at 57th, I think is the one that stands out. And I think there's some right around the bubble that are interesting to me. You have Harris English at 41st. You have Nick Taylor at 52nd. These are guys that were in last year. So I think all of those guys sort of create this interesting dynamic, because it is kind of close right around that 50 mark. And you have a lot of those players, Taylor Moore, right there in the mix that could still make the move into it. But I keep going back to last week in Greensboro, and I think it's the second consecutive year you didn't have anybody play their way in or out of that top 70, which is shocking to me.
Yeah, it's certainly shocking to me as well. You look at some of these names, Adam Scott, who, of course, was the beneficiary of a number of sponsor exemptions into the Signature Event Series. Yes, he did have an opportunity to win the Genesis Scottish Open, his best result of the season, but he was also compiling some points, whereas some other players did not have that opportunity. Will Zalatoris, who would not be playing next year on any sort of medical exemption, even though this year he was still sort of learning his new body after having back surgery late last year. Jake Knapp, a winner on the PGA Tour this year, one of those young, exciting players, is the bubble man right now at 50. You mentioned Victor Hovland, and I know you're a little bit jet lagged. You sound terrible. We can get into that.
It is bad. I just realized that. Like, that is a struggle bus for me right now. Wow.
We could certainly get into that at the end of this podcast, since I know how much people love when we talk about our personal lives. So I did want to dig in on Victor Hovland a little bit. He had a great press conference on Tuesday, and we have not actually seen all that much of Victor Hovland this year. What struck me when looking at his stats is just how little he's played. Just 13 times on the PGA Tour, a single top 10 that came at the PGA Championship. And I thought, Rex, that Victor Hovland said something that was so relatable in that press conference, that when he's playing bad or he's playing poorly or he's not playing up to his standards, he really has no interest in playing tournament golf. He knows it's not going to be good enough to win. He knows it's likely not even going to be good enough to contend. It's just going to be sort of an all-out grind fest, and he would rather be at home practicing and trying to get it right. You think back to the PGA Championship this year and what happened at Valhalla. Pre-tournament, he said that you know, he actually thought about withdrawing from a tournament, not believing that he had a realistic chance to win. Well, he finds a feel on the range at Valhalla, ends up having by far his best week of the year, finishes third in what looked like a pretty optimistic performance for him. How surprised are you that this reigning FedEx Cup champion is right now on the outside looking in to even make it to the second leg? And do you think he is almost too far gone at this point? Like, do you actually have serious concern about Victor Hovland's career trajectory at this point?
Stunned, shocked. I mean, I can keep going. I mean, if you go back to the end of last year, you could have made an argument that take the 2-year rolling cycle out of the world ranking, and he was the hottest player on the planet at that time. And look, you were comparing him at that time to Scottie Scheffler and Rory and all of these players who had phenomenal years. And I would stack Victor right up next to him. I mean, he was playing a brand and a level of golf that compared to any of the top players in the game, and to fall off so quickly and so dramatically and so jarringly, because this was self-inflicted, is the part that I get. I mean, it's one thing if you have someone that's going through an injury. It's one thing if you have some sort of distraction off the golf course. I'm the first one to say, look, they're human beings and things get, you know, life happens. I think it's the Tom Brady line. I'm 40 years old, man. Life happens. So I get all of that. What I don't understand is to decide, you know what, I'm going to try something different. And I'm going to try it so wholeheartedly and just completely oblivious to everything else around me that it's going to be a detriment, that it's going to turn me into a worse player going down the road. That to me is just something I don't understand. We've seen it on certain levels with other players. I think we keep going back to Martin Keimer, probably is the best example of this. He wins a major, he wins the Players, he gets to number one in the world, and he decides, you know what, to win the Masters, I got to be able to hit it from right to left. I got to be able to draw the ball around corners. So he decides to completely rework his swing for 1 week out of the year. And I think we've had this conversation about Rory going to the Open Championship, that maybe he needs to find a different brand of golf. I always kind of come back to that idea and say, why? Like, I just don't understand why, if this works so well the other 51 weeks out of the year, maybe you just wait for another Royal Liverpool where it's calm and the wind's not blowing and you don't have to deal with the elements, because you've won one. So that's not really on your list. You need to kind of figure out how to win the Masters. I'll give you that one. But what Victor tried to do, and I think you've done a really good job of this over the years, sort of detailing the personality here, is shocking to me, because he goes down these roads and it's clear he has no interest in coming back.
That's why I'm not totally shocked. And look, I covered his two playoff wins last year. I covered when he shot 61 to win at Olympia Fields. I covered when he shot 63 on the final day at East Lake to win the FedEx Cup. It's unbelievable in the sense how far he has fallen. This was a player who I would argue certainly at the end of last August was the best player in the world. Better than Scottie, better than Rory, better than John Rahm. He was fifth a year ago in strokes gained tee to green, 65th this year. And on Tuesday, he went deep into the changes. And one of the regrets that Victor Hovland now has is that he was hitting at this time, if not a straight ball, maybe even a little bit of a draw. And he has always preferred to play this squeeze cut. And apparently he preferred it so much that he went down a rabbit hole during the offseason, despite playing the very best golf of his life, despite being a hero for the European Ryder Cup team, despite being the reigning FedEx Cup champion, despite contending in a major championship for the first time in his career, to make sure that he was going to start to hit the ball left to right again. Well, he got his swing pattern so far off, and now he has had a really difficult time trying to get it back. He thought that he'd discovered the fix. Remember on the range with Joe Mayo, they'd reunited. They were doing some work in Vegas and at home in Florida, and he finished third, and all was well and good. But he is such a curious person, inquisitive person. He loves digging down these rabbit holes. He loves asking himself questions and then figuring out the answer why. I really do believe, and I did a deep dive on this earlier this year, both written form and on TV, about that personality. I really do think that he has learned his lesson this year, that what I had was good enough. It was good enough if I'd given it time to be the very best in the world. It does not need to be perfect. And I think he's learned the hard way in 2024 that what I had was great. At this point, it's just trying to get back to that point. It's not trying to elevate it from a certain level. It's just trying to get back to that 2023 form.
And this reminds me of something that Jordan said a few years ago, when I think he and Cam McCormick had gone down what Jordan felt like was a bad road as far as the swing goes. And there was a real level of frustration when he's explaining it, as only Jordan can, saying that I have gone 5 miles down the road in the wrong direction. Now I've got to walk not 5 miles back, but 10 miles back to make up for the lost time and to be in the wrong direction. So I think probably to a certain degree, what we're seeing with Victor is he went down that road in a long, long way. And it's going to take him some time to dig his way out of it. You're right, at Valhalla, it seemed like he'd found something and everything was clicking again. Clearly, that's not the case. I don't have a high degree of confidence that he can play his way into the top 50 this week. However, he's still a really talented player. He just made some bad decisions.
Yeah, I mean, I think I saw a stat on the PGAtour.com that basically he needs to finish at least 30th this week to give himself a chance to get inside the top 30. Again, there's been a lot of T15s, the T20s, T30s over these past couple of weeks. He's not followed up.
You call those middling. I know what you call them.
Yeah, pedestrian middling performances. Again, this is a golf course where you really need to be on with your ball striking. There's so many water hazards. There's so many potential areas that are quite penal that if your ball striking is not up to snuff, you're going to suffer. Victor Hovland certainly could suffer this week if it is not there. I also want to touch, Rex, on the biggest name who is outside the top 50. That, of course, is Jordan Spieth, 63rd in the standings, likely undergoing left wrist hand surgery sometime this offseason. It does make for an interesting conversation, though, Rex, because Jordan Spieth is 25th in the U.S. President's Cup standings. Like, are you automatically leaving Jordan Spieth at home? He has not played a good golf tournament in a handful of months now at this point, but you are going to have potentially some unproven players on this U.S. roster, whether it's Russell Henley, whether it's Chris Kirk, whether it's Akshay Bhatia. Would you automatically leave him home to say, hey, get ready for next year and making a run at Bethpage? Or are you still sort of checking in with Jordan Spieth just because of the leadership component? Keep in mind, he's one of the players on the task force who actually put Keegan Bradley in the position for next year's Ryder Cup.
Well, if he does anything over the next week is what he's going to have to do. But
he's going to have to play well this week just to extend his season.
Just to extend his season. So, no, I think he wouldn't be. I'm not saying he's not on my radar. And you pointed out probably a good one that, look, the team's going to be pretty young. However, I don't know if that's even going to be a bad thing for the U.S. going into this event, because it gives them an opportunity to try some new players in that format. And maybe it allows Keegan Bradley to take a good hard look at what he wants to do next year during the Ryder Cup at Bethpage. Because let's be honest, the President's Cup is not the issue when it comes to the United States. That one seems to be pretty locked up every 2 years. It's been, three decades now since the United States has lost it. So I wouldn't say that he's off the team 100%, because I do think some things could probably factor into it. But I know I would have no interest in taking a player that's 25th on the points, that, as you pointed out, hasn't played a good tournament in months and is clearly dealing with some sort of injury. That, to me, doesn't sound like the kind of player I'd need in the locker room.
Yeah, it's certainly going to look like it's going to be a new look team for the Americans, either one.
And I don't think that's a bad thing.
No, I don't either. Same conversation we had about Keegan Bradley. Like, I think change is probably a good thing, but you're going to have Sahith Theegala on this American team. Akshay Bhatia is 11th on this U.S. roster. I'd love to see him get a chance. I think the Jim Furyk and company should take a long, hard look at him. But look, are you going to put Russell Henley? He'd be a 35-year-old rookie on the team. He has not won in nearly 2 years. He's 8th in the current standings. Chris Kirk, the winner at the Century, has not played well for months. He's 12th in the standings. Again, the 6 automatic qualifiers will be determined after the BMW Championship next week. And then you have 6 captain's picks with Jim Furyk. But some of these names, Rex, outside the top 12, whether it's Sam Burns, Justin Thomas, Cam Young, Billy Horschel has played great of late. Davis Thompson, a recent winner on the PGA Tour, and kind of fits that young mold as well. It's going to be very interesting. Brian Harman is 10th in that position, played the Ryder Cup last year, but has not had the best of form over the past couple months as well. There's going to be some players who are certainly stung by Jim Furyk's decision, and we'll talk certainly more about that in the coming weeks as those decisions are made. Sausage fingers up. Please go ahead.
Well, and I think on the case of Jordan, this wrist has been an issue for a long time. You and I have talked about it. The idea that it could just pop out at any given moment is pretty shocking when you consider that as a professional golfer, that's got to be terrifying, that it could be this swing where it pops out and he's pretty much out of the mix for that tournament. I think it happened at the Players' Championship this year. It happened not while he was playing, while he was off the golf course, and that pretty much was the end of his week. So that's kind of tough for a professional athlete to have hanging over his head. I don't even know that I'd necessarily want to be in the mix for the U.S. team this year. Get the surgery, get it out of the way, make sure you're fully recovered by the time the new season rolls around, and try to do it healthy.
Yeah, he shouldn't be a consideration. I'd love to see Jordan Spieth back and fully healthy by the time the new year rolls around in 2025. All right, Rex, we talked about the top 50 bubble. How about sort of this discussion about the FedEx Cup playoffs? Scottie Scheffler, as he has done each of the past couple years, took exception with these FedEx Cup playoffs being called the, quote, season-long race, as you've no doubt heard endless times in Peaches Tour commercials over the years. The best player has not necessarily been the FedEx Cup champion. In fact, no number one seed entering the postseason has ever gone on to win. Does Scotty have a point? Is the PGA Tour leaning too far into entertainment as opposed to rewarding the success of its players?
I think if the PGA Tour is guilty of anything, it's leaning too far into calling it a season-long race, because it's not a season-long race. It was never going to be a season-long race. It was never going to be a playoff. Like, that was probably part of the problem to begin with, is you called it a playoff and it was never going to be that. You want to look to other sports, and golf doesn't really follow in that suit. And I keep coming back to the idea, and I've said this too many times, but, and again, conversation with the tour official last week about this, they created something pretty much out of thin air during a time of year when most people for golf is very much an afterthought. Everyone's getting ready for football season. You're coming to the end of baseball season, whatever the case may be. And the PGA Tour created something that's entertaining and gives you a reason to tune in on Sunday afternoon to East Lake during the Tour Championship, and it brings out the best stars. That's a really good formula. That's the best you could possibly say about it. And if you're Scottie Scheffler, I 100% understand his frustration. Like, he has been so dominant this year. Yeah, it's a little aggravating to know that the best you can do is go into East Lake with a 2-stroke lead over the next guy on the list. But if you don't do it that way, we have enough in the book to look back and say Vijay Singh showed up that year and just had to remain upright for 72 holes. And that's not exciting for anyone. It wasn't exciting for Vijay. It wasn't exciting for the field. It wasn't exciting for the fans or the corporate sponsors. So yeah, what they have right now is not a season long race. Is it good for what this is, a postseason, a cup series, whatever you want to call it, instead of a playoff? Yes, I think this is the best version that we've seen over the 2+ decades.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think this is the best version that we've seen in the staggered start format has been implemented since 2019. Like, I actually really enjoy these 3 weeks. I'm disappointed I'm not in Memphis, not just because I can't go to the barbecue shop or Germantown commissary. There was something, here's an idea that I have that I've been noodling over these past few hours and past few days. There is this thing called the Comcast Business Top 10, where it's a $40 million pool, and it's rewarding essentially the top 10 players in the FedEx Cup regular season standings. And Scottie Scheffler got $8 million for topping that race. The FedEx Cup playoff pool, which is, again, 3 weeks for top 70 players, then goes down to 50, then goes down to 30. The winner of that, of the postseason race, gets $25 million. Again, $100 million pool for 3 weeks, $40 million pool for best performers over the entire regular season. I feel like that should be flipped. I feel like the Comcast Business Top 10 should be a $100 million payout to reward the best player of the season-long race. And you could have a whole shebang at the Wyndham Championship and a whole celebration, and then essentially have a $40 million postseason for, you can call it the FedEx Cup if you want to, but you cannot call it the culmination of the season-long race or the best player that season, which I think is sort of synonymous with being a FedEx Cup champion. Just have a $40 million boondoggle. We actually can have a playoff race, have a cut. If you're a top seed who doesn't play well in Memphis, all of a sudden you're out. Like, just sort of whittle it down that way. That way you're separating it, and you actually are rewarding season-long performance as opposed to sort of shoehorning this three-event playoff into the quote-unquote season-long race.
I wouldn't be against that. This is like one of your hot takes you probably spent a little bit too much time thinking about, because I don't think anyone's clamoring for the opposite. I don't think that's what Scotty's clamoring for. I think what Scotty's talking about,
I think Scotty wants to be known as the FedEx Cup champion for being the best player this season.
Yeah, I do too. And I think it means something. And this goes to what we talked about was the player of the year race over when Scotty won the gold medal. And my argument was no, because Xander could still have a really good playoff, win two of those three events or whatever the case may be, and walk away. And we have seen PGA Tour members lean into the idea that winning a FedEx Cup means something now. After all of this time, there's enough history behind it for the players to be like, yeah, that dude played really well. It doesn't matter with how many strokes he started with or in front of or behind at East Lake. I think the cup itself has come to represent, okay, this is a season-long achievement, even though it doesn't really dovetail very neatly into that. And I guess we keep going back to, it's always the New England Patriots, right? Like, they were undefeated going into that Super Bowl, and it didn't matter. You still ended up losing. So I think this is kind of vice. This is the definition of sports. You can be so dominant Wait a minute. They weren't undefeated. I'm going to get called out on that one. Let me clean that one up. They were not undefeated. I'm sorry. But you can be so dominant and go into the playoffs and you essentially start over again in every other sport. I think the tour, in probably a very long-winded, clumsy, awkward way, has tried to create the same thing. Is it perfect? No, absolutely not. I don't think you're ever going to have a perfect scenario. But I don't think anyone would want to flip those two, because if you do that, I think you take away from what this 3-week stretch is. Part of that is money. Like, it's the money grab. We all know what it is. And also, it's worth paying out. That FedEx Cup bonus goes all the way down to 150. So it's just not the 30 guys that get that. That money gets doled out. And granted, the 150 guys are getting far less than the top 30 guys, but that money's getting doled out. Part of what creates this special 3-week run is that money.
But Rex, in 3 weeks' time,
but Rex,
there is going to be howling if Scottie Scheffler is not the FedEx Cup champion, because this is the scenario that we've been talking about since 2009, where a player is head and shoulders above the rest. Scottie Scheffler has a 6-win season. We have not seen a 6-win season on the PGA Tour since 2009, and yet he's going to enter East Lake, assuming he still is number one in the standings. Again, if Scottie finishes outside the top 40 and Xander Schauffele wins this week in Memphis, Xander Schauffele will be the new number one in the FedEx Cup standings. That's a little bit crazy to think about. But just assuming that Scotty is number one heading into East Lake, if he snap hooks that opening tee shot, OB left, and makes double bogey, all of the good work over the previous 9 months is gone in an instant. This is the exact nightmare scenario that we have been discussing. If Scotty Scheffler does not win, I promise you there will be calls to change the format. If Scotty Scheffler, if he has to withdraw from injury and finishes 30th, in the FedEx Cup standings, if he continues to play poorly at East Lake, like he's done ever since his debut the year there in 2021, it's just a fact of life. There are going to be calls to change the format if Scottie Scheffler does not win the FedEx Cup this year.
Probably, because I think there's calls to change the FedEx Cup every year. It doesn't matter who won or who lost. I think that's kind of the fun of sports in this front. But no, I'm not going to get that banana shake. Like, all right, then maybe some players will be upset. Certainly Scottie Scheffler will be upset, and I understand why.
I'm going to be that upset.
That because, sounds like something you're going to do. You're going to call for changes, demand changes right now.
Well, first of all, I've always thought, this is a different tangent, I've always thought that it is crazy to me, Rex, that the season-long champion every single year is determined on the same golf course. Like, the FedEx Cup champion is determined every single year at East Lake. Scottie Scheffler has said himself that East Lake is not his favorite golf course. They made some changes over the past year with Andrew Green coming in, who did some great work in Congressional, has done some great work at Oak Hill. I'm sure he's done some great work at East Lake as well. But this is a golf course that traditionally, historically, has favored the likes of Rory McIlroy and Xander Schauffele. Those have been the two best performers at East Lake over the past couple of years. So every time they show up at East Lake, regardless of their position in the standings, is probably going to have a chance to win the FedEx Cup. That's a problem. And I know Augusta National does not favor everyone. I know there are certain players who tee it up in the Masters who have absolutely no chance to win the Masters, save for some lightning in a bottle, flukish type scenario, right? But you may not win the Masters, but you have three other major opportunities throughout the year to pick one off in a tournament venue and a location that is more suited to your game. Instead, you are boiling down the season-long champion every single year to the same golf course that's brutally long, it's brutally hot, and it favors one style of play, as we have seen ever since the Tour Championship's been held there.
I'd be a huge fan of rotating around. We just had a long conversation about why isn't there a tour event in New York or Chicago or Philadelphia or any other great American city that you could pick this time of year, and they have good golf courses. They probably have much better weather than what we end up with in Atlanta. You know what they don't have? They don't have Coca-Cola, who's paying the bills that week. So I'm a little bit more on the realistic side that, all right, I understand what you're saying. Like, East Lake is not going to be everyone's brand of vodka, and certainly Scottie Scheffler falls into that category. Yes, it seems to be very much tilted towards Xander Schauffele and Rory McIlroy and their style of golf. I understand why people wouldn't like that. That doesn't change the fact that Coca-Cola is paying the bills. And this is a business. That's the part that I never quite understand when people get worked up. And they do it all the time when it comes to TV. Like, you and I have to experience it because we're showing the U.S. Open and everyone's mad about the commercial load. And I always try to explain that, look, I don't pretend to understand how the economics of this work, but we're not a pro bono business. The PGA Tour is not a pro bono business. They have to go where the money is. And in this particular case, the money is in Atlanta at East Lake.
Look, I'm pro Coke. I'm anti Pepsi. This is how I choose to live my life. It is just absurd to me that the quote unquote winner of the season long race, which we have heard in endless commercials, is determined at the end of a three.
Take that out. Get rid of it.
Playoff.
It's bad verbiage. Take it out. Forget about it. It's not the season long race. The season long race
is determined. That ends the same golf course.
It ends at Wyndham.
It's insane to me.
Like, let's just end the season long race at Wyndham, and then whatever's left, that's going to be the playoffs, which is still not the right verbiage, I would argue. But okay, let's just stick with that. It is not the season long race.
I'm fine with that. I'm absolutely fine with that. Playoff fever, Rex, is upon us. Anything else on your mind before we get out of here on this podcast?
No. And I think what you're going to see, and this is probably the most important week of the year, I've argued, and I'll continue to argue for the reasons you just pointed out. Like, top 50 is so important right now. Don't get me wrong. I mean, if you get to East Lake, there's a lot of perks that come along with that as well that make life a lot easier for you as a touring professional, but none of them are as big as what happens this week. And again, I don't know how much movement we're going to see around that top 50 mark based on what we saw last week at the Wyndham, but it kind of has that potential of being one of those Sunday afternoons where you're going to sit there and watch the projections. I hate watching projections. Whenever someone brings up projections in April, I can't roll my eyes quick enough. But in this particular case, that's when they kind of matter, and it makes it exciting.
Yeah, this is a tough tournament to cover as someone who typically covers the BMW Championship and seeing sort of the fluctuations and the projections for the top 30. It's always a tough event to cover because players can post early and then they're no doubt leaving the golf course, going wherever you want. And like, you want to talk to the players who either get in or just miss, except you never end up doing that because they always leave. They're hard to get to. They blow you off, whatever the case might be at the end.
You want to drink the tears. You want to drink their tears is what you want.
Well, I want to savor the achievement. And for some of these players, whether it's a Maverick McNealy, a Minwoo Lee, like, this could be a life-changing moment for them to get inside the top 50, get all the major championships, get in all the signature events for 2025. Like, that's going to be a very big deal for players of that ilk. But yeah, it's also going to be hugely disappointing for now players who are either going to have to get in through this swing five, next 10, rely on sponsor exemptions, which I did not say anything about a hard cap on those sponsor exemptions in the signature events for 2025. Like, it just made the road a little bit more difficult. That said, the 2025 schedule came out, Rex. I have already gone through and started reserving Marriott's for tournaments I want to cover. You better believe the FedEx St. Jude Championship will be on my list in 2025. I'm already working up a food itinerary and where I can hit on my Monday through Friday schedule. All right. That is going to do it for this edition of the Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Lav. You guys are the drill. In the meantime, nbcsports.com/golf for all the latest news, notes, and updates. Have plenty of bloggable material from the early week press conferences at TPC Southwind. Rex and I will be back on the pod on Sunday night to recap the first leg of the postseason, as well as break down all of the happenings among the top 50. And if there is any change, Scotty Scheffler better help not, if there's any change at the top of standings. As always, thanks for listening. Thanks for the support. We'll talk to you guys in a couple of days.
Jetlag, real.